And so anyway, that's what I've been doing for a number of years, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about this. So I call this one, as you know, I said earlier, Worldview of Youth, the Troubling Story. And so this is what Nehemiah is about. I founded Nehemiah Institute in 1986. Long story, won't go into that. But I named it after Nehemiah because Nehemiah is what? The wall rebuilder. And I felt like America needs some walls rebuilt. And so I did that and have drawn on the book of Nehemiah for years and years and years to shape the ministry that we're doing of what it means to go back and rebuild. You know, we have not been exiled like the Jewish people were. They were exiled geographically. We have been exiled ideologically. But we got to come home. We got to rebuild. So the same story, just a little different way. Life's fears for the pilgrims. We've already talked about this quite a bit. Laura talked about this. I show a similar chart, a little different than hers. The three different institutions, family, church, and state. You know, that's the foundation of what we're about in America. And I list here the different responsibilities that God ordained for these institutions to have. These are the only three institutions that God gave us as institutions. And they're all under God, Romans 13, elsewhere. This was good for 300 years, 1620 to 1920. And then something got in our water, and we just went crazy. For the last 100 years, something's really messed us up. So this is the way it's supposed to look. In fact, it looks more maybe like this. They should overlap because these spheres work together. They're supposed to be in harmony and working together on things that makes for a culture, that makes for a society that God can bless. But what we've done in the last 100 years, I show it like this, we've shrunk the family in size a bit, and we've grayed out education because the families aren't smart enough to do that, you know. And then the same with the church, we've grayed out education there and even care for the poor. That used to be, that is a biblical command, but we don't do that anymore much. You know, I show these circles equal size because we are equally important to God, equally of God. And as Laura mentioned, if you shrink two, what happens to the third one? It's going to blow up. It's going to enlarge. And so this is what we've been doing. We've been transferring things over from family and church into the state and say, you guys do it. It's too much work. We don't want to do education. We want to do care for the poor. We don't want to do this and that. Let the state do it. Well, how well is that working out? In the past several years, even worse, I gray out community under family because we're not smart enough again. The church, I grayed out everything because the church's gone crazy in most places, it seems like. I'm really frustrated about that. Maybe that's coming through. And then so the state just keeps getting bigger and bigger. We pretty much put everything there. The state is in a God-defying mode, and it's horrible. I need to say this. When I created these charts, I wanted a good American-looking chart, red, white, and blue. It wasn't my intent to make the state blue. It just happened. I'll get in trouble if I go further. All right. Why the shift? Why in the world did this happen? There's a one-word answer. You know it by now. Worldview. How we think the world's supposed to work. How do we look out at the world and say it should be this, that, right, wrong, so forth? Our churches don't talk about worldview. Not very many. There's probably 25 churches around the country that talk about worldview. One of the best churches I know of in Sioux City, Iowa. What good thing comes out of Sioux City, Iowa? Well, this church does. And man, they are doing a great bang-up job on worldview. And a few more. But this is what we have to get churches into, understanding why this is so important. So the Peirce Test, Observing This Shift, a biblical worldview assessment program designed to assess how one views God, man, and the world. Stop someone on the street and ask them their views about God, man, and the world. Their answer is their worldview. This is what they think about how things are. And that tells a lot. So the Peirce Test, as you know by now probably, is five spheres. These five. When I designed the Peirce Test, I didn't start out with peers. Peers come out of that. I was doing some work with Pat Robertson back in the 80s. I was involved with some ministry work where we were trying to fix the problems then. And he shut it down after 2 years when he ran for president. And overnight, we were all out of work. But I had this conviction, this kind of thing is necessary. Because we were going around the churches, we were talking about Christian culture, mostly pro-life stuff. And I just asked God to help me stay into that. And when I was doing that, I had the chance to meet some different Christian ministry guys, ladies, and we were talking about things, about what we thought would be good to fix the world. And at some point I began to wonder, are our ideas biblical? Or are they just what we think are good things to do, rooted in something? So I thought it'd be nice if we had some kind of a tool to help us know if our thoughts were biblical or not. And so what I did for a couple of years, I started reading a lot of these theological kind of books, recognized good conservative leaders, and I would capture statements that seemed to say something foundational about something in society. And I would just start capturing statements. And then I started reading the other side. I read the Communist Manifesto, I read the Humanist Manifesto, some of their publications. And again, I would capture statements that seemed to highlight what they think are foundational. So I was gathering all these statements. I eventually started whittling down to 100 statements. And at some point, I started going through those and I said, I think I'm seeing some education statements, some economic statements, some statements about religion. And so I began to rearrange them. And one day, out popped peers. Five categories. So then I shrank it from 100 to 70, so it would better fit a class period for schools. And so the peers test consists of 70 statements, 14 in each of the five. And of the 14, seven are written from what we would say is a biblical point of view, and seven are written from an anti-biblical point of view. You know, these humanist guys that I was talking about earlier. So that's what the peers test is. It's 70 statements, you read a statement, you say, I agree, I disagree, back and forth. And then we developed a scoring system. And so for those of you who took the peers test, the scorecards are at the table. You come by and I'll give you those. Usually I go through kind of a process and I embarrass people. I don't ever show bad, you know, low scores. I just show, you can't flunk the peers test. You can't. You get a number grade and a letter grade. The letter grade is A, B, C, or H. That's all. You're not like, you know, you can't get D's and F's on the peers test. And so years ago, people say, what's H stand for? Heathen? Hellbound? Hopeless? I said, no, it just means you need a little help. So if you, when you look on your scorecard, you might have some A's, B's, and C's, and a couple of H's. That's pretty common. I'm going to show you some summary results. So where am I going next? Oh, yes. Here's a problem that I see. In the last 50 years, the church has been about the R category. How to get people to heaven when they die. And they don't touch the other areas. You don't hear many sermons on economics, civil government, education. This conference, I know the minister in Winter Garden who is the head of the ministerial association. 92 churches are in that association. He knows what I do. I sent him the agenda. He said, this looks pretty good. I'll send it out to the guys. Maybe a couple women, I'm sorry. He did it again last week. Not one response. The church is not interested in this. At least these churches are. Nobody's here that I know of anyway. Moving on. So since the church is focused on religion, we say, you guys, you can have the other areas. You can have government, you can have economics, you can have education. You tell us about social issues. That's what's happened. The church has pulled out, said, it's just not our job. It's too hard, whatever. We're not interested. They behave as if it's not biblical, like these areas are not biblical. Well, how crazy. You don't know your Bible well if you think these areas are not biblical. The Bible's full of this stuff. You know the Bible talks more about economics than it does church? Get your commentaries out. Get your concordances out. Purpose of civil government. Laura touched on this. Dixie, I think you did too, right? We keep hammering on this. Do you believe civil government should be limited or expansive? According to the peers test, which has a limited government index in addition to the five, because we take the questions out of the five categories, and if those questions have anything to do with what's the purpose of government on this issue, we made that a sixth category. We did this a few years after peers was out. It's proving to be one of the most telling indexes. We get the highest scores and the lowest scores in this index. And I've, because of that, become convinced that our view of authority largely shapes our overall worldview. When we answer, who do we think is in charge, that shapes our worldview. So this is the problem. What the Pearce test is not, okay, here's what it's not. It's not a knowledge test. There's a lot of those on the internet, people, places, and events. And it's good, you know, we should know those things, but it's not a worldview test. It's not a gauge of whether or not you are a Christian. We have a disclaimer on the Pearce scorecard that says this in so many words. It's not a measure of how holy you are or how much you love Jesus. That's not what the Pearce test is about. What it is about is how you think the world should work in these five categories. Because you have an idea of how they should work, but where did you get your ideas from? And I'm telling you, if we're not trained biblically, intentionally, we're going to default to what's happening in the last 100 years, and we're going to think like humanists. That's what we're doing, and we're passing it on to the next generation. So this is an overview of what the Pearce test is about. Then the question is, well, is it valid? So what? I got a high score, I got a low score. Why should I pay attention? Why should I be concerned about that? Who are you to tell us how to believe? Fair question, right? So I had to go through a process of determining and proving if the test was valid. Because when colleges started calling and asking, we've learned about your Pearce test, we think we might use it, but we'd like to see a report that shows that your test is proven to be valid. I didn't have one. I didn't know what that meant. So somebody steered me to a guy who does this, goes through an instrument, an assessment instrument, has a process of showing if it's valid or not, and reliable or not. Those two words, valid and reliable. A test has to be that to be used. So I spent a lot of time, a lot of money going through this. We did three different exercises. I'm going to show you the results of one called construct validity. That was one of the three. And in construct validity, you get two different groups of people that you know are different from the outset. And you give them your assessment, and you see if your test proves or shows that that difference is there. You get the picture? One group of people here, another people group over here, and you don't like each other. I mean, you just really are of different worldviews. So does the test show that? So I set out to do that. Well, when I was working with Pat Robertson and some other ministries, I got to know a number of heads of different ministries, and I sent them the Pearce test, and I told them why I wanted them to take it, not because I was testing them, because I wanted them to test the test. And I asked them to take it. And 30-some of them did that. And I got the results in. You know, our test goes from minus 100 to plus 100. First, I'm showing from 0 to 100. The three worldview categories on the top side, biblical theism, that's what we want. Moderate Christian, kind of 1 foot in the world, 1 foot in the kingdom. And secular humanism. You know, this is an idea that God, he's not there. You know, it's just us, right? That's basically secular humanism. So then I got results from these ministry leaders. And I'm going to show you some names in a minute. Here were their results. Average scores, right around 90, and especially, look at this, limited government. That was the highest score. That was really cool. No, none of these guys scored below 70. That's our minimum for what we classify as a biblical theistic worldview. Not one of those guys scored below 70. About 7 or 8 of them scored 100, which just means they agreed with our position on it. And some of them had some differences. You know, good, very good people can have differences. I mean, that's why we have denominations. I don't know if we need 4,000 denominations, but that's why we have denominations. You know that there's 32 Baptist denominations? I've been in 4 of them. Got a ways to go yet. But who are these people? Ministry leaders. I want to see hands. If you know, whoops, did I go too far? Got to back up here. Here they are. Any of you know any of those names? Please raise your hands if you know a name. Okay, so everybody knows a name. So let's just assume that we agree that these guys, pretty good guys, they got it figured out. They've got a pretty good worldview, biblical worldview. I know all of them. I've had the privilege of meeting all these people. I've worked with them. They know what I do. It's been a a fun ride. For 30 years I've been doing this, and so I've had a chance to work with these individuals. And this guy, Ray Moore, is in South Carolina. We're quite close friends. Ted Bayer, he's in California. He does the movie guide, you know, Rating of the Movies. They're all good guys. R.C. Sproul Jr., I never met his dad, but I know R.C. Jr. pretty well. We communicate yet now and then. So they scored up in the 80s and 90s. Well, that was good news. That was what I was hoping would come out of the worldview assessment that we were doing, that the Pierce test would simply reflect what I already knew of these guys, that they've got a good worldview. They write, teach, all that kind of stuff on that. So then I had to find a way to get some people on the other side of the aisle. You know what I did? I found two magazines. This one's called The Humanist Magazine. It's out of Buffalo, New York, comes out every month. So I contacted them and told them I wanted to run an ad offering our assessment of life. That's what I called it. I didn't want to scare them away. I paid for an ad for 3 months for people to write in and get our test and take the test. I did the same thing with the New Age magazine out of Austin, Texas. We had 350 people who took the Pierce test from these two magazines. Some of the staff took the Pierce test. Would you like to see how they did?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Let me see. All below zero.
Wow.
I was so happy. Because it was helping me give validity for the Pierce test. I assume they answered it as they meant it. So that's incredible. And when you put it, especially in religion, look, man, woo, they don't like us. I'm telling you, they do not like us. You put it side by side. The humanist friends say, and you know, you got to go this way. And our biblical scholars say, no, you got to go this way. Aren't these two things true? This chart reflects two very different bodies of thought. I mean, get up in the morning and they all think differently, very differently. Which group is having the most influence on our society? Isn't that sad? Do we have to say that? These guys are running the show. They're working their plan. We don't have a plan, like I said. I mean, we kind of have our own little holy huddles and we all know we're going there someday. That seems to be sufficient. I don't think God's happy with that. So, then with that ammunition, and I got a very nice report from these groups that helped do this, that says, yes, the Pierce test is valid. You can trust it. You know, you get your results compared to this, and just keep in mind, when you read your results, do you look like the left or the right? That's why I put them on the left. Us on the right. Okay. Then, here's an interesting thing. This is six groups of people. The biblical scholars, that's the group I just showed you, that's 0.1% of our peers' audience. Average score right at 90. Next to them are pastors, about 1% of our peers' audience, 125,000 tests over 30 years, 1% of them are pastors. Almost all those pastors, several hundred, are pastors that have a Christian school. And somehow the Christian school learned of our work, and so they said, we want to do your peers' test. And the pastors would say, gee, I guess if I'm having my school do a test, I should do it myself just to see if I think I like it. And so they're just barely up into the biblical theism category, just a couple points over. They should be 90, but whatever. Next are faculty of Christian school. 3% of our audience is faculty in Christian schools. Halfway, not even quite halfway, into the moderate Christian worldview. And then 4% are adults. They're just people that find us somehow. So right about the same. So if we want our kids to be above 70, how are they going to do that with the faculty only halfway there themselves? That's why the point I made earlier about teacher training. You got to do that. Remember what Jesus said about that? The student should not be greater than his master. I think he knew what he was talking about. And so that's why we see those results. 7% of our peers' audience are colleges, Christian colleges. We've worked with 32 or 3 Christian colleges, biggest to smallest. 7% of our audience are those Christian college students below the red line to be a minimum for worldview, paying big bucks to get that degree. And then 85%, this is our main world, 85% of our audience are high school students. This is Christian high school students. So, man, I got to draw something on here. What this chart is showing us is that here's the leadership of today. Here's the leadership of tomorrow. You see a problem? What's the world going to look, what's America going to look like in 30 years? I mean, why would we expect these kids to go out into the world and be all about biblical worldview? Pastors, ministry leaders, all of them know and talk about it. Kids leave home within 6 months. Guess what they left behind? Church, Bible, prayer. This is America. This is what we're looking at. And so the humanists and the Marxists that are here trying to do their thing, they're not having a lot of pushback. And in fact, I'm telling you, according to some Pierce Test questions, these guys think, you know, maybe they got something to say. Maybe these Marxists have figured it out because they answer the test questions. It looks, makes it look like that. So, for the 15 or so of you that took the Pierce Test, where do you think you're at as a group? I'll show you. Right there. Better than most adults, but still a little room to grow, right? And this is common. I mean, it's because this is everywhere. It's in our culture. We've all just kind of slowly gone with the flow of culture, and so we bought into a lot of secular ideas unknowingly. It's not that we were anti-Bible. We just didn't know because we're not hearing these things from a biblical point of view. So we just have thought, that sounds good, but it's not good. So that's what we're trying to do something about. And then when you look at this, the next one, you know, here's the blue again. This is the biblical scholars group. And the green are the humanists and New Agers. And for 30 years, since 1988, the average score of youth from Christian homes, whether in Christian schools, homeschooling, or public schooling, the results are going south. And so today it's around 10, 15, the average score of youth from Christian homes. We get peers' results from public schools. Imagine how we do that. Public schools don't buy materials from us, I promise you. But we work with churches and youth groups, and we do peers testing with youth groups. And sometimes, I mean all the times, youth groups are mostly in public school. So we get that look. And when we just narrow out that, oftentimes it's below zero. And I'm not surprised about that, because that's the classroom today in the public school. You know, it's been de-Christianized badly. So that's a problem. In fact, I show it like this. The blue are those youth groups. These are kids from Christian homes in public school in the single digits for their peers scores. And then the traditional Christian schools, what I call traditional Christian schools, pretty much a public school at a chapel service, at a Bible class, and hopefully hiring Christian teachers, but you don't change much else. Same kind of general education idea. Traditional Christian schools, results are also going down year by year by year. Because again, the kids are going with the flow of culture. Social media, all kinds of things that are shaping how they think, they're just going with the flow of culture. And so 85% of the Christian community in America uses public schools. 12% of the kids are in Christian schools, 3% are homeschooled. That's been that way for years as far as how is the Christian community educating their kids. This Alex Newman, when he speaks next, he's going to be here in a half hour. He's going to talk about this problem. So I'm going to not say the bad stuff about that. I'll let him tell the bad stuff. That's a real problem. And so here's the way I show this. 90% of America's Christian homes, 90% of their kids live in this box. Below 30. I mean, unless you can come up with some way to prove the Pierce test is not valid, which I don't think you can, this is data. This is hardcore data that says our kids are in a secular worldview. How do you argue with that? Show me your data if you think it's different. I don't know of any data. George Barna puts out similar kind of stuff, some other places. But Piers is probably the most substantial. George Barna is known for his worldview results. We've had him speak at some of our conferences. George Barna's a good guy. But when he started putting out newsletters years ago saying 9% of Americans have a biblical worldview based on his test, and to his credit, it's accurate, but I just want to be fair about this. George Barna's test has 7 questions compared to 70. All 7 questions are in the religion category, all 7. So I'd say it's not really a worldview test. It's more of a Bible knowledge test. Now, you have to believe those 7 things to be really an evangelical Christian. They're really important statements, and I'm not arguing with that at all. But there's so much more that we got to think biblically about than just 7 things in the R category. Okay, let's see. I'm going to show you some results here. I always like to do this. I like to show that of those of you who took the Piers test here, about 15 of you, I always show men versus women. And the results are always the same. I can't figure this out. The women always score higher. You're not surprised, are you? But here's how the group did in comparison to adults in general. So the seminar people are the darker compared to general adult results over the last 10 years, I think it is. So, you know, whatever you've been doing, you've been reading the right stuff and, you know, changing your thoughts. So you're a cut above the average Christian adult. That's all this is saying. We would like you to be growing and, you know, some more things. But I thought you'd just be finding that interesting. So then let's go back to this. My chart that I showed this morning. And here's what I just showed you. Youth from Christian homes in 1988 when we started this, you know, not a straight line, but going up and down. And today, I have not worked with a Christian school in 3 years that scored above 20. Not a single school. Because of the secularization of our culture, where the kids are being fed, the teachers are not well trained. And so that is happening. And then I'm saying, as I showed earlier, I think that's because of this. For all these years, our nation had just been gradually going to a secular idea of life, and that's what's caused this. It just makes perfectly good sense to me. And I say it's largely a pulpit problem because we're not addressing how to think biblically about these all-important areas. One particular thing that's on the Piers test has to do with, in economic category, has to do with money. How do I say this? Really? Right. Surely you've all heard over the last several months that our government is printing lots and lots and lots of new money. What's it called? Fiat currency. That's the name. Fiat means false. It's false money. It's not real money. It's false money. But stores take it, so we use it, right? Do you know that that is anti-biblical to the core to have fiat currency? Because in places like Leviticus and Proverbs, repeated in the New Testament, unjust weights and measures. That's a phrase. Gene? No. Would you return a call to Alex? He's trying to just respond to that text. Unjust weights and measures means a money system that's not honest. It's false. It's fake. And so throughout human history, peoples have cheated on their money systems. And clipped coins, that was an idea. So what we're doing, we have gone to a dishonest currency system. And the last nail in the coffin was with Nixon when he took us off the gold standard. We don't have a asset-based currency anymore. And we just make it up as we need it. How would you like to do that? You get up in the morning, you have a copier machine, and you say, gee, I could use an extra $1,000 today, no problem, just run it off. What would happen to you if you did that? You get free rent for a while. But the government does it, and we think, no problem. Do you know that for years and years and years, other countries have tried fiat currency? You know how they all end up? Bankrupt. They go under. They had a lot of pain. I'm telling you, we're going there. This system is not going to continue. We're not going to figure out how to make fiat currency good forever. We're going the same way. We now have 3 times as much currency in existence because of what they've been doing the last several years than what we've had in our whole history as a nation. We just ballooned the amount of currency. And it's just a really very anti-biblical matter. So this is a serious problem. But there are some good results. What I'm showing here are results of Christian schools associated with FACE, Foundation for American Christian Education. That's what the ladies have been talking about, principal approach. Those schools, their methodology, their manner of teaching, the methods, as well as the curriculum, the teacher training, have produced students. So what you're seeing here are students. These are results of students in high school that take the Pearson test and right stay in about the 70s, you know, staying above the line by a little bit. Clearly, something is different in these schools than what's in these schools. Something is making that difference because they learn how to reason from Scripture. They learn how to use the Bible to reason to a good view about economics and government and social issues. So the results are just that. When I created the Pearson test in 1988, I did not know about principal approach. Never heard of such a thing. I just had a few schools that were scoring well and some students scoring in the 90s. And I thought, gee, it's good that, you know, some of them are getting it. And about 4 or 5 years into this, I get a call one day from a gentleman who, he said, I have learned about your Pearson test and I have some questions. And so I talked for a while and then he told me who he was and how he learned of Pearson testing. He's gone now. He used to work with D. James Kennedy down in Fort Lauderdale. And that connection led him into connection with FACE and principal approach. And he was spending some time with a principal approach school up in Plymouth, Massachusetts. Paul Jaley. Anybody know Paul Jaley's name? And they were in discussion, he was telling me, about the school. And his name is Charles. And he said, he's telling me the story. He said, I asked Mr. Jaley, he said, how do you know if your kids are really getting it? Meaning worldview, you know, Christian ethics. Paul opens up his desk drawer and pulls out a copy of the Pearson test. And he says, this is how we know. And this guy had never heard of such a thing. Well, he was very intrigued. And so Paul gave him contact information. He called and we talked and become very good friends. And he opened some doors for a few other places. And I've got 4 minutes. I think I'm going to end with telling you his life story because it's really, really amazing. Charles Wolfe was his name. Yeah, you know of him? God bless you, Jerry. Wolfe.
Oh, yeah, the economics.
Economics guy, yeah, yeah. So we became friends and spent some time together. And one night, he said, I'd like to tell you my story. And I'll just abbreviate it because Alex is not here yet, but he's coming soon. His father was a professor at Columbia University, a card-carrying communist in America. His father was a member of FDR's kitchen cabinet. What that meant, that FDR would have some guys come over to his house, they'd sit around the kitchen table and plan on how to convert America to be a socialist nation. And Charles would go with his father. He said, I'd be sitting there on the floor in the kitchen playing with toys. He was 10 or 12 years old, he said. And he said, I'm hearing these guys talk about, you know, socialism. And he didn't know if that was right or wrong, but his dad was one of the members of the kitchen cabinet. And here he is, a professor at Columbia University. When Charles was 16, he told me, a friend in school gave him a Bible and said, you know, you might want to read this. He took it home, looking through it, and one day his dad catches him reading the Bible. And he said, again, it's what Charles told me. He said, son, I see you have the Bible. He said, yes, a friend of mine gave me this. And he said, well, let me give you another book. And he handed him the Communist Manifesto. He said, you read both of these books. He says, I'll give you a year, and you come back and tell me which one is right. Sometime in his senior year of high school, he went back and he said, Dad, he said, I believe the Bible. I've become a Christian. His father said, we have to part ways. Charles left home, never saw his dad again. Worldview, that far apart. And so Charles was motivated to go out through our life and to live out what it cost him his relationship with his dad. Because his dad was hardcore. I mean, Columbia University, FDR's kitchen cabinet. And not all the separations we know about are happening, but we today know, don't we, about separations. Friends, families, over what's going on. It's happening everywhere, and it's all a worldview issue. So I'm going to stop, and we're going to do another little coffee break until Alex gets here. He is so good. I mean, he just is wonderful. He'll be our next speaker, so take a rest break, some coffee, and we'll call you back together maybe in 10, 15 minutes. Oh, yeah, another drawing.